Blog Talk Radio.
One, everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of their music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy their wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein. Yes, everybody. Hello, 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 and welcome to Tippy Talk. And today we have a very special show for you. We're actually going to attempt to change your entire perspective in history. That is, if you have totally and completely bought into the fact that the scientists know what they're talking about all the time, every time. And if you have bought into it, that in itself is a big mistake because, as you know, scientific facts are always proven and then later on proven wrong, and then later on new facts are proven right, and then later on new facts are proven wrong. So everything you hear from the scientific community really needs to be up for debate, which it is. But we have a very special guest today, not just anybody, and our guest today is Jay Hall. Jay Hall is mathematician. He has a master of science in mathematics, which in itself is a really fascinating field, which is responsible for our ability to fly to the moon, if we flew to the moon, and to figure out so many things, because when you really get down to it, everything boils down to mathematics. But he also has a lot of other sciences that he has studied, and he's currently working as an assistant mathematics professor at Howard College. And besides all that, Jay Hall has written a couple of books. My favorite book, which we're not going to talk about today, is Calculus is Easy, because to me, that is so not true. But I would love to have somebody prove to me, and yes, I am going to check out the book, Calculus is Easy by Jay Hall. And if you have an idea about calculus and you don't think it's so easy, I suggest you definitely check that out. But that is not what we're going to talk about today. I'd like to welcome Jay Hall into our show. Welcome, Jay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And today we are going to be talking about your other book called Young Earth Science, which is, in short, yes. And what that brings to mind is, yes, we can.
That's right.
But it is definitely different perspective and definitely something that we're very, very interested in. So before we go into any of the specifics of your book and all that stuff, why don't we talk a little bit about you? What is it about math that got you started even in that study, what made you interested in that, and when?
Well, it started at a fairly young age. I would even track like how many hours I would watch a certain show. And especially in high school, I think a lot of times it helps on your influences. And my high school math teacher was very excited about it. And I basically, that was contagious. And I basically caught that. And kind of two aspects of it I usually try to emphasize and that have influenced me have been the beauty of mathematics. And you can think of like what goes behind art, like clay. He used lots of shapes and what they mean. And then you can think of the applicability. So like you say, technology, you know, how we build things and, you know, cars and planes and stuff, the engineering behind everything, you know, like Newton, he figured out gravity. Well, once we have that figured out, that was a relatively simple formula about an inverse square law. Well, all things aren't quite that simple, but the point is math is applicable and it's also beautiful.
It is. So is it math that really fascinated you or numbers?
Well, I think that that you can turn numbers into pictures, that sort of a thing. Of course, I grew up, I was fascinated by things like, say, the Beatles movie, The Yellow Submarine. But now what we do is we take you know, computer-generated images. So I used to like to doodle and draw all kinds of shapes. But the thing is, anything like that, you can translate to a number or an equation. And even well, like one thing that connects everything, knots can be turned into formulas. But some physicists apply a knot theory to some of their ideas, like on a very small level of how they understand matter. So there's one aspect where it applies to physics, and also like our DNA, when it gets all turns into gobbledygook, our chromosomes, well, they form knots as well. So knots, just as one math topic, relates to all sorts of things, and they can be pretty as well.
Yeah, sounds like you definitely were born to be a mathematician. There's no question about that, especially. And most people are either good in language or good in numbers. And there are a few people that are like both of them. I'm one of those people that loves language and writing, but I love math and mathematics, even though I don't really understand most of it. But the stuff that I do understand, it all of a sudden, there's this amazing feeling when it clicks in your brain, and all of a sudden something that totally has made no sense now clicks and makes sense. It feels like such a great accomplishment. Do you get that when you try to figure out an equation?
Oh, very much. And it's also exciting to see when students kind of catch the fire as well. And fractals are, of course, a very beautiful thing. And you can buy T-shirts with fractals on it, like a stream has a fractal pattern. Trees have a fractal pattern. If you just pick up a twig, it sort of looks like a mini tree. That's the key concept, that at the small level, it looks like the big object. And also, believe it or not, our cell phones have fractal antennas in them. So there's a practical side, and then there's a beautiful aesthetic side to it.
That's very interesting, because I think it would be the same thing with universal concept of one atom and the way it looks, and then a molecule, and then bigger and bigger. And I guess the picture of one atom would be very similar to the picture of a universe, of a Milky Way, of the sun and the moon and all that. Isn't that the same too?
Yeah, because you have, in a sense, like from Ezekiel, a wheel within a wheel. And so the planets revolve around the sun. Our star system revolves around the galaxy, and there's clusters of galaxies and strings of clusters of galaxies. So there's all this micro detail and also macro detail.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, maybe this sounds like a stupid question to you, but if I don't know what it means, I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening may not know. So you mentioned fractal antennas for cell phone and fractal branches of trees, and I'm not sure what fractal means. I know
it's
fractional, but...
Yeah, it's a fractal, F-R-A-C-T-A-L, and what it's short for is a fractional dimension. Because there's a mathematical way to define what a dimension is. A floor is two-dimensional. You're stacking up boxes, that's three-dimensional. A string is one-dimensional if we, you know, kind of idealize it. But actually, once you do the math on some of these weird shapes, the mathematical fractals, They actually have a fractional dimension, which kind of that kind of blows your mind up. But that's actually how the math works out to create these interesting shapes.
So see, I learned something completely new today. So it's fractal, F-R-A-C-T-A-L?
Yes, fractal for short. Short for fractional dimension.
Beautiful, beautiful. So it's fascinating because you look at things and you just take it for granted and you don't really think about all the little intricate details that really goes into that tiny little fraction of anything, tiny little fraction of a flower or a tree or even one little tiny sand particle or something. It's just totally amazing.
It is.
I don't see how people can see all that and still think there is no God, but that's just my personal opinion. Obviously, I believe in God, so it's hard for me to understand people who don't. But so is there anything else that you were interested in your life other than mathematics that kind of clicked together that you pursued?
Well, I at a fairly young age, I like to collect rocks and look at fossils. And that was my major before I switched to mathematics. There was a downfall in the oil industry in the early 80s, and that's what kind of precipitated my change of major from geology to math.
Oh, okay. So how much of the geology did you study?
I don't know the exact number of credit hours, but say maybe like a year and a half, something like that.
Okay, so is that what led you to write this book that we're going to be talking about, which is a book called YES, and it stands for Young Earth Science. So it's kind of a combination between geology and mathematics?
Well, I have some math ideas in the book, and so I became a Christian when I was 14, and I had read the science books and, you know, gone to public schools and was taught millions of years, but over time understood that the scripture seemed to conflict with that. And then through a study of some scientists that not too many people hear about very often, that you actually can make an argument for not only science, but also history and other fields to make an argument that the earth is actually thousands of years old and not millions and billions.
Okay, so actually you stole my big line because I was just going to say you have this revolutionary thought in this book called Young Earth Science, and that is that what we have been taught, that the earth is millions or maybe billions of years old, may not be exactly that way, that it may actually be just thousands of years old, the earth.
That's right. And also native cultures from around the world, some of them say, well, we had this king and we had this king. And say like the Hawaiians, they have many generations of kings, their names memorized, you know, certain groups. They still hold those traditions. So if you just say an average king lives so long, it only goes back so far. And of course, a famous one would be the Sumerian king list. And there's a way to interpret that only takes it back to the beginning of only just thousands of years.
Right, thousands of years. And that's what you explain in your book. That's what you talk about in the book. And do you basically explain the details of how you came up with this alternative, which I guess you're not the only one. I mean, other people have contemplated that. But does the book basically give details of how that is more possible, or like what exactly does the book talk about?
Well, a famous one would be, you know, the end of the world supposedly happened in 2012. Well, that was, of course, based on the Mayans' calculation and some other. There were other reasons for it. But interestingly enough, there was a solar blast that we just barely missed, that it wouldn't have destroyed the world, but it would have hurt our electronics. So you can look that up, that in a sense, they were almost right. But they also had a calculation on when everything started, and it's just thousands of years ago. Why maybe trust the Mayans? Because they calculated the solar year, how long it takes for the Earth to go all the way around the sun one time, to just a matter of seconds. So they watched the stars, they watched the planet. They were very, very careful in their calculation, and their math system was based on 20. They had a very, very interesting math system. So that's just one culture that gave a specific date. Other cultures, you have to kind of make an assumption. Okay, they said so many kings since creation, and you make kind of an assumption. Well, how long was maybe the average reign of their kings?
So that's basically the concept that you talk about in the book about how you came up with the Young Earth Science Project.
That's right. And you also have to ask, how long does it take for, the Grand Canyon to form or specific rocks to form? My wife is from the Philippines, and there was a famous explosion of Pinatubo in 1991. And ashfall, it went up to a height of 600 feet, and that just happened really, really shortly, a matter of minutes. And you had 600 feet of a deposit. So under the right conditions, you can get a huge deposit in a short amount of time.
So the theory that it takes thousands and thousands of years to form it could be not so true, because it could be formed in a relatively very short time. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. So there's a number of things kind of clue together, because almost all cultures of the world have some kind of a flood tradition, as it's usually called. Well, the most likely explanation is that really did happen. And if you had a catastrophe on that scale, you would have a huge amount of geological deposits, not just one tiny thin layer.
Right. And so what it sounds like to me is that you're passionate about it because of your religious beliefs. Is that what actually started you on the quest to prove this point? Was it about religion?
Well, there's several angles to it, because if we do believe in God and God has a plan, then that connects to history. And so certain things happen for a certain reason, like the Jews were in bondage in Egypt for such a long time. But it says that the sin of the Canaanites weren't to their full ripeness, and there was a reason for that. So if you say, even though we don't understand, like, say, a tragedy or a disaster kind of in our own life, we don't fully understand it, that that's part of an overall plan and there's a reason for it, and, life has a real meaning. So if you clue that in, then the timeline of history also fits in what God has a plan for. So in that sense, that kind of gives a purpose and a motivation behind it. And yet, at the same time, I'm arguing that what God's word says corresponds with what God's world shows us, and that there's a way to connect the two.
I like that. God's word corresponds with God's world.
Yes.
That's a great quote. I really like that. So it definitely was, as you would call it, God's word that made you go out and question the validity of basically everything that you were taught.
That's right. And even a lot of people that are skeptics realize, well, this evolution thing, it seems to have a lot of gaps, a lot of holes in it, and it's ultimately based on a chance. Yes, natural selection works on the genes that are there, but there's the word of the mutations come, that's chance. And so it almost takes the meaning out of life if you take it to a full conclusion. And even Sigmund Freud, who, based a lot of his ideas on Darwin, even went further to say that if you believe that life has value or meaning, you're a little bit sick, because you didn't take evolution to its right implication.
So that means that life has no meaning.
I think that's the most straightforward implication of Darwinism, and some Darwinists actually admit it. They put it in books and so forth. It's just that that's a pretty sad way to look at the world. So if the Earth is young, then evolution doesn't have a chance. So a lot of these issues are interconnected.
So there definitely is a huge difference between believing, if you actually buy into the concept that the Earth is only thousands of years old and not billions of years old, it makes a huge difference. So how would it make a difference in the life of people and how they understand life if they actually understood and we actually think that it's possible that the Earth is only a few thousand years old?
Well, Right. Going back to the idea of connecting it to an overall timeline, it helps us to see history in a different light. Consider the Odyssey and the Iliad. It's often thought, oh, these are fanciful tales, but yet, you know, the Trojan War, that was a real thing. And so our connection to history. And in my book, I mentioned my father, Francis Hall, and he could have theoretically interviewed some Civil War veterans and got those stories. And in some of the past, it was a tradition to bring back the tales of our noble ancestors, and these were the heroic things they did, and going back many, many generations. And like I mentioned, say the Hawaiians, the Native Hawaiians have that sort of a thing. And so it gets our connection to history that, at least for some cultures, they actually put a number to it and came up with a date. But the idea, it makes it the way we look at history, and that everything is connected and has a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Not just random events happening that have no purpose and have no reason to exist.
Right. And even some people that you might take some positives and negatives. Alexander the Great conquered so much of the world, and maybe there were some cruelties involved. But that produced a Greek language is kind of a semi-universal language. And then the Romans, well, they were vicious. Well, they built these fantastic roads, and they also kept the peace. So when Christianity came along, they had a common language to use. They had a network, the roads. And they had a relatively peaceful circumstances, so they could spread their message. So different things happen, at least in retrospect. Sometimes we might could put the pieces together and see why it happened.
Right. So everything is connected. But what I don't get is, even if the planets and even if we the Earth has been around for billions of years, that doesn't mean that nothing is connected. That doesn't mean that everything is random. I mean, I can believe that the Earth has been around for billions of years and still understand that it's been around for a reason and that everything is connected. I don't see how it's mutually exclusive.
It kind of has to say, if you're going to build a house, you would do it in a reasonable way. You lay the foundation. You put the beams holding up the superstructure. Maybe you do the roof, and then you put in the plumbing, the electric, start putting in the rooms. And then once the overall house is done, that you would put in decorations and plants, and you maybe have some pets, that there's kind of an order to it. And other than the evidence, I think that the history seems to say that not the case. And basically you have an argument that goes like this. There's different kinds of animals, and we see that. And, you know, even a child knows this is a cat, this is a bat, this is a whale, this is a seahorse. They have that sense of differences. And if you take that essentialism, in a sense, and apply it to what we see in the world and what we see in the rocks, I think it makes more sense, at least to the beginning of the rock record, what the fossils and whatnot, that can't be, 500 plus million years old, which is what the mainstream dating would be.
Yeah, I see. That makes sense. So how does the fact, so let's say I accept the fact that this globe has only been around for thousands of years instead of billions of years. How would that be connected to stuff like nationalism or, Darwinism, it makes sense, but what about school choices or stuff like that? How would that come together with that?
Well, there are other voices, and people do even like unschooling and different choices for their children. And I'm very much a promoter of a school choice. And there are schools that say, yes, the young earth science or the yes viewpoint. Yeah, there is reasons to believe that way. There are scientists who hold that. And so that allow opportunities for parents to send their kids to a school that say maybe teach Latin or that teach, hold it, this this evolution idea, it's, you know, the it really isn't founded on the basis of the biological facts, and to give that a different perspective. Because like I said, if the young earth is the true theory, then at least one implication would be Darwinism can't stand. And then if you reverse it, if Darwinism is really the truth, I think that sucks away the beauty and our aspiration for living. So in terms of the laws and whatnot, I would hope that we would have more laws that are open to homeschooling and allowing to send your kids to a private school and such.
Oh, I see. So it's about learning different views of life rather than learning the same exact thing for all the children. But we do have private schools right now, and we do have different views, like, the, for example, the religious schools. They teach their kids how to be nice religious kids. We do have that, except that you have to pay for it.
Right, right. Yeah, I just would like to have more freedom in that, and I would even support vouchers. But the thing is we take what we get in school, and what you said at the beginning is so critical. There is a worldview that we have, a sense of some of our basic ideas, what's the world about and so forth, and we have certain presuppositions. Well, all my science books that I've read since I was young say the earth is billions of years old, but to apply our critical thinking, we need to question assumptions and consider alternatives.
Which is really hard to do if you've been taught all that stuff from a very, very young age. It's very difficult to change your mind if you do that. For me, for example, I think when I was probably around my teen years, everything that I ever knew and believed to be true was totally destroyed in my mind. And it was such a life-changing event that it was literally like a death. It was literally like I died, and now I had to figure out what my belief system really was. So I don't think it's an easy thing. I don't even know how I survived it, because I don't even know how I didn't end up in a mental institute. But I can understand that if you take someone who was brought up from the day they were maybe 3 years old or 6 years old or 5 years old, and they were told certain things as fact, okay, because you're not taught those things as theories or as possibly even contemplating. This is the way it is. This is the fact. You got to accept it. You got to pass the test. And in order to pass the test, you've got to know it as fact. And you're so young. And all of a sudden, this kid is going to turn 18 years old, and they're not going to be able to accept any other point of view.
That's right. That's right. And it once we're old enough where we can read, maybe a different, now it's everything's, all internet, but back in the day, read some different news magazines or read some different newspapers to get some different perspectives. And even from the idea of faith, I don't have a problem with someone, okay, read the Quran and ask yourself, does it have the ring of truth? Read the Bible and pray that, ask God to open your eyes. What does it mean? And to understand it. And then, of course, there are other views, but I would say that to read what's out there, and I believe that God will, God will show you the truth. And in terms of a particular book, Mortimer Adler, who used to be one of the editors for the Encyclopedia Britannica, he wrote Truth and Religion, and eventually narrowed it down to trying to take an academic sense of it, eventually narrowed it down to it's either Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. And then kind of left it in the reader's hands to go from there.
Well, just in case you didn't know that, I cannot sit down and read the Quran, and neither can you. As a matter of fact, 90%, if not more, of Muslims are not even able to read the Quran because it is written in Arabic. So the only thing you can really read if you want to read the Quran is a watered-down version of the English language, and it's also watered down and interpreted by whoever wrote it. So it's not that easy to just read the Quran and make your own decision.
Good point.
And also if you really talk about reading even the Bible, the New Testament, again, you have a lot of different versions, but at least they are written in English, and at least you can read all those versions if you really are interested in it. And the same thing with the Bible, the original Bible. So So it's not that easy for someone to really do that kind of research. But so what is it that really makes sense in your mind that this planet is really just thousands of years old? How is it that you came up to that conclusion?
Well, there's a simple way to let me follow up on what I was talking about, that, you know, birds are birds and alligators are alligators. That distinction, that if we go to look at the rock record in general, there's kind of an order. If we look at, say, the bottom of the Grand Canyon up to the top, there is kind of an order. But like trilobites that, I don't know, kind of look like roly-polies, but larger. But they lived in the ocean. They're often at some of the bottom layers. But was there something going on at the Earth that just, buried trilobites? No. So in these different layers, if it was a part of one gigantic catastrophe, because of the fact that you would have deep sea creatures, then shallower sea creatures, then, you know, land creatures, and then the creatures that are able to go, to escape disasters better would be higher up in the rocks. And it's interesting. You find bird prints before you find actual birds. And a similar thing for the comparison with dinosaurs. And so you basically have to crunch most of the rock record, not all, but most of the rock record is part of one event. Well, if that's the case, because, you know, some of them are like 100 million years apart by standard dating, then the dating methods must be way off. And that's where the idea of catastrophism and like a big rock hit the Earth, and that's what destroyed the dinosaurs, that theory. So a lot of these things, like I said before, kind of work together.
Oh, okay. So you're not saying for sure that it's thousands of years old. You're saying that it's a possibility.
Yeah, I'm saying that there's a lot of evidences that go that direction, and the main reason that most of the scholars hold to the billions is because of radiometric dating. And that wasn't firmly established until, I think, something like 1929. And it was almost a political thing, a scientific organization. And it ultimately wound up mostly on one person, Arthur Holmes, who actually studied something about radium. And it actually, the evidence kind of went the other way. Because from his research on radium, the Earth ought to be heating up a lot, the actual whole Earth, and it's not.
Okay. So for people that are interested and want to read Young Earth Science, how do they get a hold of it?
Well, the easy way to remember the website is just totalyouth.us, totalyouth.us. And my little slogan for that is, yeah, T-O-T-A-L. Youth, Y-O-U-T-H.
Total Youth, dot.
Yes, U-S.
Dot yes? Oh, dot U-S.
Yes, yes.
Total Youth, dot U-S. Oh, Total Youth, yes?
Total Youth, dot U-S.
Oh, okay, Total Youth, dot U-S. That's your website.
Yes, and the long form of it is youngearthsciencebook.com. And I have a contact page and so forth, social media, podcasts, videos, and so on.
Okay, so if anybody wants to find out more about it, it's a very intriguing concept, especially, it's really, for some people, it would be earth-shattering. Then all you have to do is go to either totalyouth.us or Young Earth Science Book. .com, right?
Correct.
And the book is written by Jay Hall. I definitely suggest that you check it out. And there's one more thing that I'm kind of curious about that maybe you can answer me. So in light of the fact that you know that basically everything is questionable, that's basically the bottom line. And I like that. I like that. And I guess for me it makes sense because of my belief system being totally shattered at one point, I never could really say, this is it, I know this for a fact, and nothing is going to change my point of view, because once everything you know has been broken and shattered, you're always thinking, well, what if I'm still wrong? There's always that little thought in my head, yeah, I believe that, but I'm open to arguments, prove me wrong. Okay, so basically my thing is prove me wrong, but most people are prove me right type of attitude. So with that kind of attitude, which it sounds like what you're saying is, would you be open to reading information and literature and finding out more about the new trend that's running around right now about the flat earth theories?
Well, that's another issue, and I think that can be fairly simply disproved. In other words, there's people that walk across pretty much the entire earth. It's like maybe they're raising money for cancer cures or whatever, like they've walked all the way across Africa. They've walked all the way across South America and that sort of thing. So you could start at one point, again, there's water, just theoretically, and walk all the way around earth. Or if you're president, he can get into Air Force One, point his plane east, and he'll eventually come back to the above the White House, if you want to pick a point. So I think and of course, I don't think you know, NASA's fooling to us. And the former head of NASA, I heard him talk in Houston a number of years ago. I didn't go up and shake his hand, but I mean, I'm convinced that he's honest, and NASA isn't lying to us. So like six degrees of separation. I've met some NASA engineers, and you know, they know somebody, and they know somebody. And so I don't believe all of those people are lying to us. And even Aristotle figured out the Earth was round.
Even Aristotle figured out that the Earth was flat?
Was round.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, yeah, and then there's the famous mathematician Eratosthenes that actually measured it in Alexandria and in Egypt and in one other point, maybe it was Athens, I forget. But he just did the calculation and was extremely accurate, almost, you know, very small percentage of error.
Yeah, So absolutely, I can see that you understand that we do not live in a flat world, and the world is round, and most people definitely do believe that. Well, what I'm saying is, would you be open to reading the information that I don't believe in the flat earth, personally? I'm not saying that it is, but I'm saying, would you read that information, or you pretty much already made up your mind, and you know, and that's something silly, and you don't want to waste your time on it?
Well, I know there are some that focus on astronomy, and in other words, it should be looked at and refuted. There's so many things on the internet, but it's not something that I feel like I should focus on. But those that are more expert in those fields, yeah, even though it seems kind of strange, they should take the time to look at it and give a response.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I'll be open. I listen to everything, but it doesn't mean that everything I hear, I'm going to say, yeah, that's right, that's true. You have to be really gullible to do that. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's really exciting that you've taken the time to, first of all, find out for yourself that there is such a possibility that billions of years may not be what the age is of our planet, and that it could be very well thousands of years. And it does, you're right, it makes a difference in life. It makes a difference in your belief system. And if your belief system changes, then your entire life can change from top to bottom and all around. So that's a really important issue. Do you think that the theories of the billions of years of the planet has anything to do with the fact that there's definitely a force or some kind of maybe intellectual thinking that want to just take God out of our life completely? Like, they want people not to believe that there's a God, to think that there is no meaning in life?
Well, there's kind of a step-by-step process, because the ancient earth, it kind of developed over time, and it first started in the geological area. And then Lyell, Charles Lyell, he's kind of the main person that kind of push the idea of a slow and steady process. Everything's just like that. Things don't change. You don't have severe storms that change everything or extreme earthquakes. And that was an extreme influence on Darwin. And then, of course, he sometimes had to backtrack, because some of the physicists in his own day said, well, maybe the Earth isn't quite that old. So he said, well, wow, what can I do? Maybe evolution happens really, really fast. So what was he really clinging to? He was clinging to his evolutionary idea. And he even admitted in his notebooks that he was a materialist. And I believe that fit into his life, because he had spouts of depression throughout his life. And, of course, his daughter died at a young age at 10 due to the scarlet fever. There's a lot of things there. But I think because of the evolution, the more logical implication of that is to say that life is meaningless. But if we're God's creation, and then to explore the beauty and the wonder and the positive things about the world, say like mathematics.
Right. And so you say something really profound, and that is that objectivity, of complete objectivity, really doesn't exist. So with any project that you take, your opinion and your point of view is going to be inserted into the study, no matter what you do. You cannot change that. And you just said that too. He was definitely a materialist, so a lot of his thoughts came from that perspective. And being that that's true, and that that must be true for everybody on both sides of the issue, how do you know that your objectivity kind of makes you lean towards that viewpoint? Because there's a lot of things that you know about it that I don't, being that I never studied deeply into geology or mathematics. So how did your objectivity play into your discovering that concept?
Well, like you were saying about the flat Earth, I think it's important to read and understand different perspectives, and I think that's helpful. And also thinking clearly, because a lot of the scientists, they displace the philosophers, but I'm trying to combine all of this. So part of philosophy is logic and rational thinking. And unfortunately, many schools don't teach an introductory philosophy course. And I think that's helpful. In other words, let's think through the logic. Because if you're saying, well, I don't want to be logical, I want to be irrational, well, that makes no sense at all. So there's kind of one foundation. And, you know, God gave us a conscience, so we have a sense of right and wrong. It may not be perfect. And, you know, God made the world, the plants, the animals, the universe, the stars. And so I think if we look at the world, even Kant figured out that because of the design in the universe, there has to be a God. And because of our sense of right and wrong, and we know evil exists, that there must be a moral lawgiver behind that.
Yeah, that's makes sense. Definitely, definitely makes sense. Well, thank you so much. Any last thought that you would like to leave our listeners with that you think is important for them to think about?
Well, often people are influenced by polls and, oh, the opinion says this, the opinion says that. Well, one poll that came out just a few years ago, it was from AP, GFK, AP, you know, the news people in another organization. It found that 18% were not so sure that the Earth was billions of years old, and another 18% were pretty doubtful about it. So when you put it together, about 36% of Americans are doubtful about it. And I want to do a poll, and I have a quick way to find it. Just put my name, Jay Hall, and then Age of the Earth Poll, and it'll be the first thing that pops up. Jay Hall, Age of the Earth Poll. And I'm working on a poll that's stated a little bit differently, but the way that I think it ought to be asked in terms of what people's opinion are about the age of the Earth.
Well, thank you. We're definitely going to check that out. But honestly, public opinion does not determine the truth. It just determines public opinion.
That's right. That's right.
And people are very, in a way, if you study psychology, which was my major, and psychologically know how people think and how the brain works, it's very easy to manipulate people when they're not aware.
True.
Just look at our political environment right now.
Yes, exactly.
So that's really fascinating, Jay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much for writing this book and for really thinking about it and sharing it with the world. And I can see that you're really passionate about it, and that's really beautiful to see.
Thanks again for the opportunity.
Have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Bye.
Thank you.